The four voices must be easily distinguishable one from the other, and yet have the possibility to blend at times into a homogeneous texture. Each one of the voices must be individually phrased in the most sensitive way and still fit into its role in the texture. The four voices must have the capability to expand to six or seven in order to accommodate the fuller conclusions of several of the contrapunti. The group must have the range of expression necessary to bring to life a work of the greatest intimacy and profundity. Are not all of the above exactly what the string quartet was created for?
Viola Samuel Rhodes, in his introduction to the Juilliard String Quartet's recordings of keyboard music, The Art of the Fugue by Bach. I'm Norman Gilliland.
And I'm Emily Auerbach. This is University of the Year.
How have the composing, performance, and teaching of classical music changed in the past 50 years or so? How have audiences changed, and how did some of the great composers write for the viola and for the string quartet? Well, Samuel Rhodes has been the violist of the Juilliard String Quartet since 1969. He's the chair of the viola department at Juilliard, has been a participant in the Marlboro Music Festival since 1960, and is a faculty member at the Tanglewood Music Center. He's also a recitalist, a soloist with orchestra, composer, and teacher.
Welcome to University of the Air.
Thank you very much. So happy to be here.
Well, let's start with your involvement in the Juilliard String Quartet for nearly 40 years now. What do you think it is that makes the Juilliard String Quartet into what it is? Because you've got changing members and so on. What special features make it that?
Well, we've had 11 members, and this is now the 61st year of the quartet. It was founded in 1946. And there are a number of things that have remained constant no matter what the change of members, individual members, were. The mission of the quartet, first of all, is to play and to teach. We were appointed by William Schumann when he interviewed Robert Mann to start a quartet that would be in residence at the Juilliard School as teachers of chamber music, and lately, in the last 15, 20 years, as teachers of our individual instruments. Each of us are the chair of our respective departments. And that's been a very important mission of the quartet, side by side with performing, a career which very quickly grew into an international career and has gone on for all those years, performing naturally all the works of the classical masters for string quartet, the works of the 20th century classical masters, and commissioning and expanding the repertoire of the quartet in that tradition to our own day. And the quartet, the mission of the quartet to do that has been constant.
I like your description in those program notes that you can hear each of the four voices, the four instruments, yet they blend. There is this beautiful blending where at times you can't even tell who's playing what.
Exactly. And that's one of the points of the string quartet, to be able to do that. And yet within that possibility, there's also the possibility of four distinct personalities relating to each other in a very specific way according to the musical material at hand.
Speaking of personality, in the novel An Equal Music by Vikram Seth, he talks so, I think, brilliantly about the personalities of the members of a string quartet and how if you're going to make chamber music so intimately and all over the world, different concert settings, personalities matter.
They certainly do, and each group has to find how the different personalities fit in the most constructive way. What the role, and not only the musical role, but all the other kinds of roles that you have, business things, or just personality-wise, how each person fits with the other. That's a very important thing to find out.
And which personalities are involved in this recording of The Art of the Fugue?
In this particular one, it was Robert Mann, Joel Smirnoff, myself, and Joel Krosnick. The recording's from about maybe late 80s, early 90s. I don't remember the exact date now. ¶¶
Makes Bach sound all the more timeless somehow. I mean, at times almost like I'm hearing precursors of Mendelssohn in there, and at times, of course, it sounds like pure Bach as a work for a string quartet.
Exactly, yeah. And it combines the most intellectual treatment of counterpoint or music possible, and yet the soul is involved in equal measure, and the combination of those two things make the work incomparable.
Now, you also record as a soloist and do solo recitals as well. Can you say something about the difference involved?
When you play chamber music, especially string quartet, you try to go outside of yourself, not concentrate on your own. You have to concentrate, of course, beforehand on your own playing. But as you're actually performing, your ears are going out to everybody else and to making the work as a whole. When you play solo, it's a very interesting experience. You can be totally introverted within oneself to a great extent if it's an unaccompanied work like you're about to hear with the Hindemith Sonata, to the most extent possible, and even if it's just one other person, a pianist with you, you're still very much that way, and it becomes a very different experience, also a wonderful experience, but a very different mindset.
And Paul Hindemith was a composer who has a reputation of having, I think, played and written for just about every instrument conceivable.
That's correct. He composed for just about every musical combination, and played to some extent all of the instruments. Of course, he specialized at first the violin, but he made his performing reputation as a violist. And he was a very distinguished violist in the 20s and 30s in Europe and wrote a tremendous amount of music for himself, including four unaccompanied sonatas, three concerti, three sonatas with piano, and any number of chamber works which feature the viola.
And before we hear a little of you playing part of a Hindemith unaccompanied piece, anything in particular that's unique about the viola that we should be listening for here?
In this particular movement that we're playing, it's not so much, well, maybe it is the viola, because he was imitating a master who lived around the same time this was composed, Max Reger. And he probably had worked on the Reger viola suites or maybe some of the unaccompanied violin music. And this movement that we're about to hear is a parody in a way of that. Not exactly a parody. In one sense, a parody. In another sense, a paraphrase of his take on that music. And it's quite remarkable for that. It has the same kind of character, the same kind of fanciful tempo changes, and the same type of emotional approach to a middle movement as if it were a free kind of a waltz.
From the Sonata for Solo Viola by Paul Hindemith, the violist Samuel Rhodes. What's Hindemith doing there that would require a really polished technique for the violist?
In this movement, all the double stops that are in it, all the chords, chordal playing, two-voice playing is very intricate and difficult.
And I suppose you have to the intonation just so.
Exactly.
And yeah. I also heard a lot of, I guess, is it called glissando on the viola when
yes.
you're kind of sliding around?
That's right. Yeah. The expressive, especially sliding down glissando as a vocal effect.
Yeah. Now, a composer, and in fact, even a nationality that we don't associate with string music, and with string quartets in particular, and I know, in fact, that he wrote some letters to some of his colleagues saying that in Italy we just don't really do that kind of thing very much, was Giuseppe Verdi, of course, one of the great opera composers, but he did write at least one string quartet that you recorded with Juilliard.
That's correct. He wrote a wonderful string quartet as a break during, I think, one of the principals in Aida was ill, and he was, I forget which city, was in Naples or something, and sitting around, and he thought, well, I'm going to write a string quartet. The fact is that although we don't necessarily associate, think of Verdi as a contrapuntal genius, yet he did counterpoint. He said that he did it every day. He did counterpoint exercises. And he certainly, especially as he went on in his life, and he's a composer who transformed tremendously from his early period up until his later period. The quartet is in just almost at the brink of the late period. And he certainly was well-versed in counterpoint and in writing more and more effectively for the orchestra. And that shows itself in this quartet. And the movement you're going to play is a fugue, and a very wonderful one, and sort of a precursor of the type of contrapuntal writing he used in Falstaff in a kind of opera buffa setting, except this is for string quartet.
That was The Fugue from Verdi String Quartet, played by the Juilliard String Quartet, including member Samuel Rhodes, our guest today. Back in a moment with more University of the Air.
Information on upcoming programs, listener feedback, and staff bios are among the features found in WPR's monthly e-newsletter, Radio Waves. To receive this free monthly update on all things WPR, sign up today at WPR.org.
With Emily Auerbach and our guest, Samuel Rhodes, violist, longtime member of the Juilliard String Quartet, and long associated, even longer associated, with the Marlborough Music Festival, and also a faculty member at the Tanglewood Music Center, and a recitalist and a soloist with orchestra, composer and teacher. We've mentioned that the Juilliard Quartet has this expansion mission when it comes to the music, that they've commissioned works from new composers as well as playing things going as far back as Bach. In your, it must be at least 50 years now in classical music, do you think it's changed? Do you think the performance style has changed, the teaching, even the composing styles?
What has changed the most is composing. What people were doing when I was a young man and studying and learning about contemporary music, most of the composers were at the post-Schoenberg stage, when complexity and expanding atonality and trying to gain as much as possible coherence within atonality and expanding music in that direction was the primary thing. Since then, we've had kind of a simplification movement going on. And the idea was that in becoming so arcane, the music left the audience behind a little bit, and they were sort of bewildered by all this complexity that they couldn't quite latch on to, and they needed something simpler to be able to make contemporary music believable. And I think most composers of today have gone in that direction. So we have the thesis, the antithesis, and who knows what the synthesis will be. I'm waiting for that.
But you do have this phenomenon. I mean, if we look at back at the time, well, of Verdi, for example, that we just heard from, you have these expressive descriptions for the movements.
You know,
andante espressivo, that kind of thing. If you look at some fair number, I guess, of 20th century of contemporary composers, you see the movements just as indicated in these almost mathematical terms.
Right, just giving you a tempo indication. Well, that's part of the whole thing, to be overtly emotional in that way. This is the reaction against that, and to try to do something a little bit different and a little more indefinable, since music is abstract and indefinable, and to try to go in that direction. One of the people who had a very definite, even though he was atonal and pretty much what I was explaining before, a disciple, post-Schoenberg disciple, and yet had a very distinctive and witty, a certain musical wit that has been very rare to see in that, to that extent, since Joseph Haydn. And that person is Stefan Volpe. And Stefan Volpe was commissioned by the quartet just as I was joining them back in 1969, and he was suffering terribly from Parkinson's disease at that point, and it took his life just a year or two later. So the quartet that he wrote for us, which was the first commission work that I was involved with the Juilliard String Quartet, was the quartet by Stefan Volpe, and I think you wanted to play the first movement of that now. Thank you.
That's the Volpe Quartet, commissioned by the Juilliard Quartet in 1969. I'll be honest with you. I think it makes demands of an audience. If, let's say, you go to a concert, and instead of a Beethoven or a Mozart quartet, you listen to that 7-minute Volpe quartet for the first time.
That's the first movement of two, too. There's more where that came from.
It's hard to know. I mean, obviously, with it being the Juilliard quartet, we know all the notes are right. But if I heard an amateur quartet play that, I wouldn't necessarily know the wrong notes, whether they were making wrong notes, because with the dissonance, with the pizzicatos, with the rhythm so unusual, I think it's hard for an audience sometimes to get it at first listen.
Well, it's the complexity of the atonal style. And yet this is a very coherent atonal style that has a lot of there's a lot of harmonic relevance in that there are certain harmonies that he uses and repeats over and over again. And if you get used to that, get used to the tonal shape of it, get that in your ear, it makes a lot of sense. You can also play classical works with lots of wrong notes, and it wouldn't make logical sense. And yet, if the wrong notes were consonant, an audience would probably think they were correct.
Well, what did you do to get ready to play this, since it was a commissioned work? You said it was very late in the composer's life.
Yes. Well, with every commissioned work, you have no performing tradition to look back on. You have to create it yourself, and you have to be part of the creative process along with the composer to bring it to life, to find out what was on the composer's mind, to master the material of the piece enough so you can get an idea of what that is and play it for the composer at a stage where you're far enough along so that he can constructively say something to you that would add to what you're playing, and gradually go with it in that way until you perfect the material and you're ready to perform the piece. That's what one does with every commission work that one has. And that's what also people did with Brahms and Mozart before. And it brings you closer to Brahms and Mozart when you do that. And when you work closely with a composer, especially one who knows what he's doing and knows what he wants to say and has a vision, as was true in this case. There was a critic, I'm not sure who it was, who described the Juilliard Quartet as playing the classics as if they were written yesterday and playing newly commissioned works as if they were written a long time ago. And I think that's a very great compliment because that's exactly what we try to do.
And you're a composer yourself.
I am, or I was at least. I studied composition. It was something that I did in my very young days as a student. And I went to Princeton as a graduate student. I have a master's degree, Master of Fine Arts from Princeton. And then while I was there, I studied with Roger Sessions. And I chose Roger Sessions. I chose Princeton and Roger Sessions very carefully. I admired him tremendously and the artistic goals that he had. And you can tell in the string quintet that the ProArt Quartet, of course, your own quartet here in Madison, this wonderful group, that offered to play it with me and recorded it, you can hear the influence very much of Sessions in this first movement of the work. Later on in the piece, I get a little bit more into my own thing. But one of the ideas of this first movement is that there's a very long vocal-like line. And underlying that, there are a lot of details. And it isn't an atonal style, but I hope you can readily hear how melodic it is, and the idea of almost an operatic-like melody is the most important idea of the piece.
The first movement of the quintet by our guest, Samuel Rhodes.
Thank you.
The first movement of the quintet by Samuel Rhodes, who was one of the two violists in that performance that featured, in addition to Samuel Rhodes, the Pro Arte Quartet. Some final thoughts about Samuel Rhodes and the viola when we return in a moment. This is University of the Air.
They almost always know the answer, and when they don't, they'll find it for you. Who are they? Audience Services at Wisconsin Public Radio. Call 1-800-747-7444 with your programming questions and comments.
Norman Gilliland, our guest is Samuel Rhodes, violist with the Juilliard String Quartet and also a composer and performer here in Madison as a guest. Can you tell me something about the Marlboro Festival that you've also been involved in since 1960?
Marlboro, Vermont is a very small town in southern Vermont with maybe 35 or 40 permanent residents during the winter. In the summer, it's transformed by a music festival that takes place at the Marlboro College, which is a small liberal arts college during the year, and a very good one. In 1951, the festival was founded by Rudolf Serkin, Adolf Busch, and Marcel Moise. And Adolf Busch passed away soon afterwards, and the main person who carried on the leadership of the festival, the artistic direction, was Rudolf Serkin. And he pictured a place where music, chamber music especially, could grow in an ideal fashion, away from the rest of the world, not influenced by commercial career aspects or anything like that, but purely to study the music of the great composers and the great contemporary composers. And he had the idea of getting the most talented young people to work with very experienced and wonderful world-renowned artists, not in the usual way where the artist would coach a group of the young people, which is done most often in all our schools and many of the festivals, but where the experienced artist would play in the group, actually being part of the music making, and it would be, as he called it, a republic of equals. Actually, I think Schumann, in one of his articles, coined that term. But Mr. Serkin took it over to describe the experience at Marlboro, where everyone had an equal say, and naturally you defer to a person with a lot more experience. And also the young people, I've been in both roles when I came. I was only 19. I came the first time. Of being influenced by the actual playing and the artistic direction and their philosophy about any given piece of music, and playing with many different artists and learning to adjust and expand my own ideas and expand my own technique and perfect it according to what I heard around me, what the standard had to be in order to be a really first-class performer. And there are many recordings from all periods of Marlboro. The one we're playing today is from the 60s, which was in a way a golden age of Marlboro. It's when Serkin himself, Pablo Casals, the members of the Budapest Quartet, Felix Galimir, Madeline Foley, many others were, Marcel Moise for the winds and also for many different ensembles. All of them were involved in a very profound way. And the Mendelssohn Octet, you'll hear the scherzo of the Mendelssohn Octet, is in a way a forward and backward looking historical document. The senior member, an experienced artist, is Alexander Schneider, who was one of the most wonderful musicians and vital musicians I ever knew, as a violinist, as a conductor, as the second violin of the Budapest String Quartet. There are four musicians in this ensemble: Arnold Steinhardt, John Daly, Michael Tree, David Sawyer, who I'm sure your listeners will recognize as what was put together just after that, and they became the Guarneri String Quartet. I'm involved in it as the second viola. Leslie Parnas is the first cello. Jamie Laredo is the first violin. So you have a tremendous mix of tradition here and of groups that were yet to come out of it. And I think under the musical direction, in a way, or let's say musical mentorship of Alexander Schneider, and the wonderful playing of Jamie Laredo as the first violinist. I think it was a very special experience, and I'm glad it was preserved in a recording.
A spectacular performance, an all-star cast there involving our guest, Viola Samuel Rhodes, playing the scherzo from the Mendelssohn Octet. Not bad for a 16-year-old composer, as they said, but talent there galore, both in the composing and in the performing. Thanks for sharing some of your music with us this hour.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
It's been a great pleasure. I'm Norman Gilliland with Emily Auerbach, and I hope you'll join us for our next hour of University of the Air.